Hi everyone, I'm Megan, and welcome to Word Crash, the game show where questionable plots compete for your vote to win a place in the Word Crash Hall of Infamy. First off, let's meet our contestants. Our first author is from Ontario, Canada, a self-described social media addict and knitting aficionado with an irrational obsession with Sean Spencer. Please welcome to the show, Maggie Giles.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Our next author is a romantic comedy writer, certified goat yoga instructor, and caretaker of a giant tortoise named Doug. Please welcome to the show, Lindsay Ray.
Hi.
Welcome, Lindsay.
Thanks for having me.
Well, nothing left to do but get to it. Let's play some Word Crash. First, we have a game we call Time of Your Life. Retell an experience from your life in the genre of your choice. Maggie, what do you have for us today?
I think I'd like to tell the story of my European backpacking trip in a thriller vein, maybe entitled And Then There Was One or Disappearing Act. It follows two naive, sheltered women in their early 20s who are just off on their first solo backpacking trip. Once in the subway in Naples, it feels like they're being followed as two older gentlemen seem to board the train and stand on either side of them, one blocking the doorway.
Ooh, okay. So we definitely got a thriller here. So tell us a little bit about these women. How do they know each other? Who are they?
So they are best friends. They have been best friends since they were 10 years old and had just graduated university and decided that their first trip together was going to be a two-month backpacking trip throughout Europe.
Wow. And do they speak any of the languages? I mean, does someone speak Italian or German?
One of them speaks French and the other one can speak a little bit of Spanish. It's pretty difficult.
What do these bad guys look like?
I feel like they're not going to look like bad guys at all. You said they were older gentlemen, but maybe they're also kind of attractive. Because now I'm thinking that movie Hostel, where they like lured the guys into the hostel situation with the cute girls. So maybe these are like not scary guys at all. It's just the situation that's like, are you following it?
Yeah, and totally, because two women have just come off a flight, so they have all of their personal belongings on them. And it's very clear with the big backpacks and the Canadian flags, of course, that they are tourists. So having these two kind of following them is making them uncomfortable. But are they just uncomfortable because they have all their things, or is something more sinister happening?
Wait, are you telling me that people travel with their home flag on them?
Yeah.
Or is this just a Canadian thing? Do Canadian people just walk around with a giant maple leaf on their back all the time?
In Europe, we don't want to be mistaken for Americans.
Yeah.
Because they were much friendlier to Canadians in Europe.
Yeah, people don't like Americans when you're traveling abroad. No offense, Americans.
We have been recommended by many travelers in the European countries. I'm not sure about other continents, but in Europe, they recommend if you are a North American traveler from Canada, then you make sure people know you're Canadian and not American.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. And I am even more terrified of traveling now.
No, I don't think anything bad happens, but I had a situation where in Barcelona, we had a gentleman who was like harping on us and so anti-American. And then he's like, oh, so where in the States are you from? We're like, oh, we're from Canada. And he just 180'd his personality and was just like, so nice. Oh my God, I love Canada. I want to go to Canada. We're like, wow, that was a lot of American hate. Like, what was that for?
Let's put some American hate in this story. Lindsay, why does one of these characters hate Americans?
Oh, he's not a Trump supporter. He hates what Trump did. He thinks all Americans are Trump supporters, and that's what he has concluded. But these are Canadians that he's following. He knows they're Canadians. Mm-hmm. So why is he following these specific Canadians? Like, is he trying to steal their things, or is he going to traffic them, literally, like steal the Canadians themselves? They're young girls. Maybe. They're good-looking
young
girls.
They're vulnerable. Girls. It may be very much like that they are looking to go to Canada and they're thinking, two young Canadian girls, this is our chance.
What did they do in their home countries that now, like, they need to leave?
He stole some diamonds.
Ooh.
Seems like a really safe place to go.
Maybe he has diamonds with him and he's going to be like, hey, I have all these diamonds. Just marry me. Take me back to Canada and then we'll be rich. So it looks like they're going to rob them, but really they're all going to make them wealthy. I like these guys.
They're getting props from us now. Okay, they're not bad guys anymore.
Lindsay, are you saying you have a thing for older gentlemen with lots of money?
Yes, yes, I am. That's what I'm saying.
Not money, diamonds. It has to be diamonds.
Men,
women, just older people with money in general. Good in my books.
You sometimes befriend old ladies so that they'll leave you their engagement rings and their wills to you?
Yeah. Most of my friends are old ladies. I watch their cats for them.
It's funny, we had a previous show that went down that same path.
With diamond smugglers?
No, with...
old rich people?
Yes, old rich people. Yes, old rich people. Exactly, it went down that path. So you're in good company or bad company. I can't tell right now.
It's unclear.
Okay, so they have these diamonds. They want to escape to Canada. There are these two girls. They try to romance these two girls?
Yeah, maybe at first, but then they're like, both girls aren't single, so they're not there for a good time. They're just there for history. Obviously, maybe they try to romance them, and then when it goes very poorly, they have to resort to abducting them.
So they're there for history and not for good. This is definitely fiction.
Hey, that's exactly what we did on our trip.
I love it.
We went to Pompeii, okay? It was awesome.
That would be so cool.
It was really cool, but there's people covered in lava. It's really weird.
Did you see like the ones that were covered in lava, like snuggling each other?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, it's really uncomfortable.
Oh.
Is that a place you'd put in the book?
Well, yeah. Eventually, I think they're going to have to meet these three British gentlemen at their hostel when they, you know, maybe turn down these diamond smugglers. Mm-hmm. And those men actually take them to Pompeii. So perhaps the diamond smugglers follow them. And Pompeii is pretty maze-like, and it's easy to get lost. And there's lots of places you're not supposed to cross. So they could pretty easily be followed and stalked in these volcano-covered city.
I feel like we need like a really great reason besides that they're pretty Canadians. I mean, pretty Canadians aside, we need another reason. What if one of them had to slip the diamonds into somebody's bag? Right?
That's what I was thinking that too.
And so there's some diamonds hidden somewhere to get them through customs or something.
They're being followed and yep. They're like, this is safe. They've got so much baggage on them. Let's just toss them in here and we'll just get them back. Like, we're going to be able to get them back from a bunch of girls. It's fine.
What's that moment that all of a sudden turns this super dark in the thriller? What, like?
It's definitely when the girls get separated. So one of them, maybe the one that had the diamond slipped on her, disappears. Mm-hmm. And now they're like trying to find what happened to her. And so they're trying to get the authorities involved, but the authorities obviously don't trust them because they're just a bunch of drunk Canadian tourists. Who cares? Like, she probably got drunk and went home with someone. And so the police aren't helping them, and now they're like, have to figure out what happened. So,
Lindsay, what kind of chase scene would you put in this book?
Well, it's Europe, so let's do like a moped chase scene through oncoming traffic with all sorts of pedestrians, right?
They can weave in and out of traffic. They're super efficient.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, for a moped, it doesn't have to go fast for it to feel like it's going fast because there's so little between you and the rest of the world. It's that illusion of speed.
And you know the way that if it was like a movie and how it was filmed, it'd be filmed like they're moving at lightning speed, even though, you know, like a moped's really only just along.
Do we need to put the classic knock over the fruit stand thing in there?
Absolutely.
You have to.
At least once.
At least once.
For hot dog stands, because there's a couple of those too.
Hot dog stands. What was the most surprising food that you saw when you were in Italy? You're like, what is this doing here?
So Naples, it's not actually surprising, but Naples is actually known for having the best pizza in Italy. So we actually, when we were in Naples, we ate pizza every single day because there was really no reason to go anywhere else. And there are these huge, thin crust, stone-baked, amazing pizzas. So that's the only place we would go because like this is actually based off a real trip and we were actually really terrified to walk around Naples.
Wow.
Okay.
But we had a really great hostel leader. Like, he took a map and he's like, don't go here and don't go here and don't go here and you're fine. And then we did meet three people to walk around with, but they're like, we're getting pizza. And we're like, we are coming with you.
Now, to up the tension, we probably have to have people either die or have the girls think somebody dies. What bad thing's going to happen to one of their friends?
I mean, definitely one of them has to go. Like, we have to off one of them for sure. Like, there's no way we can have a thriller novel without at least one of these beautiful British men dying, as unfortunate as it is. But he'll make a beautiful corpse, so at least it'll look good on TV. And they kidnapped the one that had the diamond. She didn't have the diamond, so now they need diamond. The guy comes, and they are like, well, screw you, you're dead, because getting all involved in our business. And now they're like, okay, this is getting out of hand. Like, we had these diamonds, we had this whole situation, and we gotta get these things back, but already they're sending guys after us. So it's like, it's time to contact them, be like, all right, you can have the girl back, but we need those diamonds that to be left behind. That's sort of where it maybe shifts. Now it's a ransom drop.
Now, do they actually do the drop? Are the girls trying to get away? Do they care about the diamonds? Is one of them like, oh, we're rich, we can't give this away? Like, is there a materialistic one?
Well, I mean, like, I feel like that could be part of it, because I don't think they would have even really realized that they had these diamonds until this happened. Or maybe the girl went back and, like, searched their bags, being like, why would she just disappear on me? Maybe not her, because she's too close with the other girl. Like, they're sisters. She's like, they're not in unfortunate circumstances. They're middle class. They're doing fine. They don't, like, need them. But maybe one of the guys who really doesn't have an investment in the girl really does need it and is like, I am seeing my opportunity. We could kill him, too, eventually, if we want. And I really do enjoy killing people sometimes in writing.
Yes, make sure you add in writing at the end.
I did, in writing. In writing is important.
Yes.
I swear I'm very happy in person.
All right, everybody. What's the end game here?
Have any thoughts, Lindsay?
Well, I'm definitely thinking that they have to come up with some sort of plan where they save their friend and also keep the diamonds, though. So they end up being rich. I don't know how to do it because I don't write thrillers. This is your forte. But she definitely needs to be rich and alive at the end of it.
Okay. So, idea. How about one of the guys takes the diamonds? He's gone. And so she's now like, oh my God, I don't have the ransom for my friend. So she has to somehow trick this guy who stole the diamonds to meet her, because she's going to be like, hey, I'm so into you and who cares about my friend, and let's run off with those diamonds together. And at the same time, and the ransom drop to meet bad diamond smugglers, get them all together in one place, get her friend safe. She ends up rich with her friend. Somebody died and the other guy probably not in good states, but they, you know, one of them was good, the other one wasn't so good. So, I mean, I think it's all everyone win-wins.
I really liked it being set in Pompeii. Like, I hope they can do this exchange maybe in the brothel or something. Like, we're going to meet at the brothel and it all goes down there, dark. It's like really creepy there at night, you know, dodging in and out of these like creepy places.
Yeah, they like sneak into like the area and they're like, this is under dark, nobody's got us, there's no cameras, this is perfect.
If it was a movie, they'd be trashing it because there'd be guns going off everywhere, mopeds flying everywhere through it, you know, crashing into things. But in a book, we can gloss over that.
Yes, exactly.
Fantastic. Well, everything ends happily ever after. And where do the girls go? Do they just go back to Canada? How does this change their lives?
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, I think at that point, what do you do? Like, they still have half their trip to do. Do they keep going? Or are they too shaken to keep going? Or are they like, now we got a lot of money, maybe we just now do it first class.
I
love that. They continue on in first class. No more creepy hostels for them.
Oh, especially because someone's got to point out, well, you can't bring the money back.
Exactly.
The IRS will take it all from you.
Exactly. It can't go back. You got to claim it all. So you may as well spend it.
Yeah. Tool around Europe and spend it on everything.
Everyone's sleeping in a castle.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
That's definitely my dream.
God.
Fantastic. And what did you name this again?
I either named it, and there was one, but that was when everyone was going to disappear. So I don't think that one really works anymore. But Disappearing Act.
Disappearing Act. I love it. Disappearing Act.
Yay.
Lindsay, what's your idea for today?
Okay, so I'm going to do The Day I Met My Husband. I know I'm a rom-com writer, but I'm going to do a sci-fi just for fun. All right, so it's futuristic. The different moons around Saturn and Jupiter are being colonized and habitated. I'm flying in my spacecraft, and I have like the signal coming from one of these other moons. And they're beckoning me over. They're in distress. So I have to fly over there. And I recognize this distress signal from someone I went to flight school with. It looks like they're in distress. I'm going to answer this distress signal.
So what planet is your character from?
They're from the moon Europa.
From Europa. Okay, so what's Europa like?
It was really cold, but they have like little pods on it where it's kind of Earth-like climates in these little pods.
What do they eat?
Algae.
Algae. All algae all the time?
Just algae. Everyone's vegan. So they just eat algae.
Fantastic. You're open vegans. I love it. What else is part of your open culture, Maggie?
That actually fascinates me with the algae, but I'd have to say that although they only eat algae, they have a lot of really decadent dishes and different ways to make the algae. So it's not as basic as it sounds. It's actually quite exciting. They're obviously all wine connoisseurs because why wouldn't they be?
The reason why you're tooling around in your spaceship, Lindsay, is because you're doing a wine delivery. You got this amazing wine fermented from a specific type of algae, and you're going to make a delivery, and then you get this distress signal, right?
For sure. So this wine is like bright blue, and it like kind of glows from blue algae.
Delicacy.
It is. It's a delicacy. It's very expensive wine.
What's the reason he's in distress?
So as soon as she pulls up, this alien spacecraft goes up there, and now she's surrounded and she recognizes this alien spacecraft. It's an advanced spacecraft from a different solar system, and there's no way she can evade them. They're pirates, and she's going to get this expensive wine stolen from her. It was a trap.
So did they use a distress signal that you recognized to lure you in, or did he leave your people and join the pirates, and now he's just trying to screw everybody over?
You got it. You are totally on point. So yeah, so when she realizes that she's trapped, she's like, okay, let them just come take the wine, and hopefully she's going to leave my crew intact, right? Mm-hmm. So on comes the captain of the other ship, who she has rebuked now.
Mm-hmm.
With him are these other aliens, one of which is a very sexy alien.
Now, what do you mean sexy alien? Are you talking about like just looks human as in sexy, or are we talking like Shape of Water kind of alien?
They're definitely not Shape of Water type aliens. They're like sexy elven from Lord of the Rings type aliens.
Humanoids.
Totally right. And she feels this like drawn attraction to one of them. He says, the pirate aliens aren't actually pirates. They're trying to get our help. We need to help them, so you need to come with us.
This is an about face for him. As soon as he sees who she is, he comes up with this plan. Or was it planned from the beginning?
The plan was to try and get her on board with these aliens, but she needed a familiar face to associate with the aliens, because she wouldn't have just gone with the aliens willingly.
Are they a type of alien that their skin is like really special, so they don't actually need spacesuits and they can just like walk around shirtless?
That would be really convenient and also
that,
sexy.
Like, makes them much sexier.
I think that would be very convenient and sexy, and they like, let's go full Twilight. Their skin is sparkly.
Do it.
Oof. You know, I've never heard anybody say let's go full Twilight and have it be a positive thing, but I think in space, you know, the glittery skin thing, that makes way more sense than a vampire.
Twilight in space. That's our hook.
Twilight in space. The in space is another game. But now someone's going to do Twilight in space.
Well, we've coined it here first.
They've got her now. She's on this ship. Is a ship dirty? Is it super clean? Is it spacious? Is it cramped? What does she have to deal with on this ship?
Has to be a sexy spaceship, so it has to be clean. Dirty can be sexy, but not in this instance. Maggie, what do you think? Describe the spaceship.
I was more wondering if they were into probing, if that was sort of their next step, or how they handle her.
I think there needs to be
into like a sci-fi erotica, not like a sci-fi regular story.
Sorry, took it too far. Okay, inside of the spaceship. Well, we know that it's definitely high tech. Probably really, really sleek silver. Maybe a little bit like an operating room that she gets a little freaked out being like, what are you guys going to do to me? Or into it. I don't know which way she's going to go. Bright lights. I think bright lights. But that could just be me. I mean, maybe there should be some mood lighting.
I think it needs to be moody. Like maybe they see better in the dark. So everything's kind of like dim. Ooh. Maybe like lit with red or something.
Interesting.
I think there needs to be some sort of interstellar galactic war thing. And her people are on the wrong side of it. And these aliens are trying to convince her to double cross her own people.
Like the other guy did.
Yeah, exactly. So he's like trying to bring more humans on board.
Find the rebellion.
Like a rebellion. But then it's like, who's really the right side? That's the whole thing.
Is she going to find out that the people of Europia did something like real awful to these aliens? And she's just going to be like totally in the dark. And she thought that they just made wine. And it was like, actually, they're just so evil.
Yeah, maybe they feed the algae like bodies.
Ground up aliens make the best algae fertilizer.
Yeah,
this is very Logan's Run. I think it's Logan's Run.
It's not vegan at all because the algae is being fed like these dead aliens.
They get so upset as they discover it because obviously they've lived their whole lives vegan and it's like, psych, you're not. You're eating meat.
Yeah,
or something
else. We're
actually
murdering lots of people to feed you this vegan plant.
Okay,
this is awful.
We've got, but so in the background of all of this, we have this love triangle.
Yeah.
The guy who wants the woman. Now, what's the woman's name? It could be your name. It doesn't have to be Lindsay. Because we're fictionalizing your life here. So
let's name her something like Euroastria.
Astria. I love Astria.
Let's do Astria.
Yeah, I love it. Astria is great. I mean, her full name can be Euroastria, but we'll shorten
it. Her friends call her Astria.
Yeah. Austria.
So now she's seeing this guy, this captain that she rebuked in a whole new light. Mm-hmm. And she's suddenly finding him really attractive, but he is cold and distant because he doesn't want to be hurt again. Meanwhile, there's the sexy alien guy with the sparkly skin who's seducing her.
No, now this is too much Twilight.
Pull this back is the all Twilight. Twilight.
To pull back the Twilight. What's the scene, though, where this gets established, where all three of them are there and then there's some tension? What are they doing when that happens?
There has to be some sort of take control moment where she sees the captain that she rebuked like in full authority and realizes that he's doing really well for himself and he is a force to be reckoned with. A space war battle.
Okay, so who are they fighting? Are they fighting the Europans?
I guess they're going to have to be over the non-vegan wine calamity.
So these people are stealing the wine to get rid of it or to sell it?
They're trying to go public with the fact that it's non-vegan.
Okay. Okay.
And the fact that they're massacring all these aliens for this expensive wine that they're shipping out to all the other colonies.
Mm-hmm. You know what would be interesting is if the space elves were androgynous.
I love that.
And not at all interested in Astria. They're aesthetically pleasing and she's going after him, but he's just like, you know, don't understand.
Oh, man. I've lost so much interest in the story all of a sudden.
Okay, we'll skip. I'll cut that out.
If we keep that, what if he's like Spock and he's not full alien? He's half European. Mm-hmm. Whatever way we're going to
I'm totally fine with them being
androgynous. Maybe makes him be like, wait, I am interested. Because
they're like, show me how to be human. What does it mean to be human? I want to feel all the human things and the human feelings. They're like cold and distant, but also trying to be warm. And so show the alien how to be human through love.
Quote of the night, love.
It's gotta
I can't that, not that do one. Romance, apparently. Like, that's just my whole thing. If there's no heavy romantic subplot, I'm like, I'm out, not interested.
Every genre can have a romantic subplot. You just gotta figure out a way to work it in. I do like the idea of maybe him being a Spock-like person. That would make him also feel very distant from his own people because he already feels like he's out of place. So maybe he's always wondered, especially after meeting the other guy, which makes it a bigger triangle because he likes his other human friend.
And he's also very intrigued. Totally right. Maybe in the end they have like a polyamorous thing going on.
I could be into that.
I love that. So it's a happy ending where nobody has to decide who they're loving.
Agreed.
They solve the problem and the wine industry on Europa is gone forever and his people are safe and they all just bang each other.
Love is love.
Love is love.
Hashtag. Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me no more.
More love triangles should end in polyamory.
If there wasn't this fear of taking a resource away from people, there'd be no tension, right? What would you do? It's the same reason why a lot of authors don't write successful relationships. It's always like, will they, won't they get together? And then will they, won't they break up? But you never have the, oh, we're happily in a relationship. We just happen to be going on other adventures together. No.
There's not enough tension there. There's not enough drama, right? Everyone thrives off drama when you're reading, which is totally understandable.
I think there's just as much room in a polyamorous relationship for characters to have some kind of drama without it being, are we going to break up?
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
Because who's going to spend time with who? How much are you spending time with who? Is somebody jealous? Because that still happens. I think there's plenty of there. The idea that the will they, won't they tension, right, who she's going to get together with is solved in the end by polyamory, I think is fantastic and would have been a fantastic way to end Trope Nope. That's another game we have, Trope Nope, where you're supposed to tell a story without using the most common tropes. And the love triangle that ends in polyamory is a shining example of how to do that. So I think actually, Lindsay, you've done like three different games today. You've done
you've crushed
Time
it.
Of Your Life, you've done In Space, and now you've done Trope Nope. It's a fantastic effort.
Well, that's great for someone who started this game off having no clue what they were doing and like relying on Maggie to show me how it works.
Okay, I didn't know either.
We did it, girl. We did it.
Yeah, cheers.
We do need some kind of set piece, though. How are they going to tell everybody that the wine is made of people?
Maybe she figures out where they're processing the bodies. Where the factory is, and maybe it's on Europa's moon, so they
Europa
have to go
is
to
a moon. It doesn't have a moon.
All right, so it's on the planet that Europa is a moon of.
Maybe it's like right underneath them, underneath their like habitable zones. Maybe like the habit zones are warming the Earth beneath them, and that's what's causing the decay of all these alien bodies and growing all this algae.
Ooh.
They're sleeping on top of like mass of aliens. Wow. This got really dark. This was supposed to be like, I met the love of my life at a bar, accidentally picking up my other drunk friend who was trying to get with me. And well, I left with a different guy. Now we're murdering aliens.
So do they have some sort of technology that they can broadcast what's going on or some sort of way of showing the people of Europa that it's going on because they're all vegan. Like, they don't want to be eating aliens. They kind of need to know, and it will likely end poorly for the Europa government.
I'm kind of envisioning a reverse heist. They have to break into the place for the transmitter. There's like two different sides. Then she gets in trouble, and which one of the love interests is going to save her?
They work together as a team and save her together.
And that's when they learn that it's okay, that they could share her. It's okay.
It's not about owning her. It's about being with her. And she has to learn that too. This is a beautiful story. Someone should write this.
So beautiful. Tell Tina.
I really want to read your book about like them traveling around and having a stand-up in Pompeii. Like, please write that. Like, please do. I want to read it so bad.
Work on it.
This idea turned out way better than the one I had written, so that's awesome.
Same with mine. It went a whole different direction.
And that's super fun. I'm glad that we did it that way. That was exciting.
Now it's time for Secret Sauce, where our authors share a tip or technique to keep the creative juices flowing. Maggie, what do you have for us?
I always have more than one project, and I'm always reading something as well. If I'm having a character that's not speaking to me, or I'm having a plot that's not speaking to me, I have another character that I can go and speak with, and I can go and work with. Or, you know, I pick up a book that's in my genre, and I read, and I get some good ideas from that. A lot of it is just consistency and kind of sometimes just making yourself write, even when you're writing stuff and being like, this is garbage, this is garbage, this is garbage. You know what? You can't edit a blank page. I know that's the most cliche saying there is out there, but I firmly believe it. I have written things that, you know, I've turned around and I've deleted paragraphs out of, or I've turned around and kept five words and turned it into something beautiful. But having a basis to start with, I think, is always a winning option.
I like it. And the thing is, you're writing even though you know it's garbage, right? You're not judging yourself. You're just letting it happen. That's beautiful. How many different things do you have going at the same time normally?
I usually have a couple projects. Right now, for example, I have a project I'm doing a full edit on. I'm about to send to a beta reader. I have a work in progress. And then I always actually like have another genre I write in as well. Like I'm a women's fiction suspense writer. I have a young adult fantasy that I've been writing, and it's probably terrible, and it's probably never ever gonna see the light of day, but it's a character that I love, and it's a storyline that I have a fairly good idea of. So when I do find that I can't write what I'm trying to sell, I will go and spend time with Menta and you know, help her along on her journey and continue that story, because it's just another creative outlet for me to work on.
It's amazing how many times I talk to authors and they come up with things like, you know what, you got to let your brain be free. If it's going to do this, you got to do this. If it's going to do that, you got to do that. I don't think I've had anyone say, no, sit down, do the work, do it all the time, forget everything else, just push through. Right? Nobody says that. And that's reassuring for me, because I too have a couple projects, right? I have my sci-fi series. And when I get stuck, I turn around and I write in my urban fantasy world. You know, I'm not trying to get the second book out for that. There's no pull. It's very low pressure. And then I just write some of that. And then I go back.
Yeah. And I absolutely love that, because I think that's such a fascinating thing when you speak to people, when you speak to non-writers, mm-hmm. And they're like, well, like, how do you come up with things? And I'm like, I was literally writing this fantasy novel that probably no one's ever going to read. I'm like, I don't know. My characters were just walking, and then they heard hoofbeats. And then the hoofbeats were this other character that I ended up bringing in. And I'm like, I didn't plan any of this. I just started typing, and then hoofbeats happened. And then he showed up, and then they got taken to this village. And it was just... it was such a pantsing moment, to give it a plotter pantser. It was such a pantsing moment. And I do find that such a big moment with writing. And I do find that such a big part of writing, because I do generally have a solid plot idea of where I'd like the story to go. But a lot of those more minor details tend to just happen. And they maybe don't stay when I do the edit at the end, or I change them up. But there's always that possibility of, you know, creating that story based off that spontaneous thing that happened while your brain was being free, and, you know, you can turn it into something. And that's sort of why it's like, as cliche as the blank page statement is, it's actually so accurate.
You did say something though. What's the pantsing thing?
Okay. Yeah. So they do classify with writing. You're either a pantser or you're a plotter. And so basically, and you're a pantser, right from the seat of your pants. You don't really have a plan. You just sort of write what happens as you write it. Whereas a plotter, tends to be more like this, 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 and this happens. And it's very much in a straight line of what you want your story to follow. I believe most writers are a combination of both. Because I think, especially, you know, when you start, you're a pantser. You're always a pantser when you start because you don't really know what you're doing. But as you get into it more and as you write more, you always have a sort of plot that you want to follow. But something new you don't expect when you're plotting happens. You pants it in some sort of way.
Well, I am definitely a pantser. Absolutely a pantser. I have like the big beats of the entire story down. I know the big conflicts written in some kind of outline with maybe 10 lines. And then it's like, let's see what happens. And I write. And I like that a lot because there are characters who have sprung into existence that I had never planned that people really like. Right? It's just poof. There's this character. People are like, I like that character. I'm like, I never planned on having them, but they have inserted themselves into the story now.
You know, that's interesting because by saying that, I actually would say you're a hybrid because you do know your main plot points. You do have a general idea of what you want your plot to do, but I also think subplot can be a very elusive creature and something that there's a lot of subplots that go into novels that just were not planned originally and were not part of the big picture. So I think that's why I'd say like a lot of writers are hybrids because they've got their big picture, they've got their big moment points, just like you said with your work. Then there's so much of that subplot, that more minor characters, those more minor details that you let flow. And then when you edit, you obviously make sure it all works together. But as you write, you let all that flow. And that's what we have to do as writers, right? We have to let that creative energy just come out. And maybe it's something we cut 2 days later when we edit, but you know, it's got to get there. It's in our brains. It's got to go on paper.
It does. And you have to get it out. You can't let it sit there. You could have the most perfect story in your mind, but if you never write it, then what does it matter? You also don't know if it's perfect. I have this idea and it's so amazing, but you have like 10% of an idea. You write it and then you'll discover the other 90%. Back and forth on that a lot myself.
It's part of the game.
It is, but we wouldn't have it any other way, right?
We wouldn't. I know. I think that's maybe a little bit morbid of us, but we wouldn't. It's a little bit of self-torture.
It is. Lindsay, what do you have for us today?
I feel like the hardest thing sometimes when you sit down is to just get started, especially when you have a hectic life and you have that one 30-minute block, hour block of time. So what I like to do is I start off by writing haiku. And it's very quick, very simple. It's 5, 7, 5. Anyone can do it. It doesn't have to be good, but it helps you brainstorm some language for the next scene you're going to write, maybe some descriptive, some emotions, and that helps you get the ball rolling. So instead of staring at your word count goal for the day of 1,000 words or 500 words or even 200 words, whatever your goal is, it can feel very daunting. So if you just start with a haiku, it's easy, it's quick, and that usually is enough to get my creative juices flowing.
Next, we have Drop It. Drop a single letter from a book or title of a movie and tell us what the new plot is. Lindsay, why don't you start us off?
All right, so I'm going to do Toy Story, but instead of Toy Story, it's Oi Story. And it's about an Australian surfing legend who was suddenly challenged by a new up-and-comer, attracting the love and attention of his group of misfit friends. When the crew packs up and unwittingly leaves the pair behind, they must team up to track them down, discovering rad waves and unexpected friendships along the way.
I love it. Who are these misfits?
They're like long-haired, bedraggled guys and like renovated vans that have just surfboards attached to the top, and they're always like, Aussie, 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 oi, oi, oi. They just party on beaches, and they're just awesome. It has such a, like, chill vibe, and they just are cool, and they just drink a lot and smoke a lot, and this could be rain.
Is it on purpose that they leave these two behind? It's just because they're too out of it to know who's there and who's not.
They're too out of it. They're just in search of, like, the next waves, right? So they're going to the next beach. But there's so many beaches in Australia, you could go to a different beach every day. So now these two that were left behind, they have to go to all these different beaches and try to find where their crew went.
And what does the crew have that they're chasing?
Well, just their found family, right? Because there's a group of misfits. So without their found family, they're just two long-haired weirdos on the beach.
Maggie, where's the first interesting place that they end up on their journey?
Are they staying in Australia? Are we going elsewhere?
I think they're just driving this renovated van. Super awesome artwork all over the side of it with their surfboards attached. And they're just driving down the road trying to find their buddies.
Right. So do they head to Sydney? Because Sydney is such a big city, and maybe that's where buddies have ended up and like where most of the action is happening.
So who do they meet in Sydney? It's got to be like this epic journey, right? So who's the first crazy person that they meet?
It's got to be some surfing legend because they're surfers. So they find like this washed out guy on the side of the road who is just holding up a sign like, hey, feed me. But it turns out he's a down and out surfing legend. So this guy becomes part of their crew, and now they're taking him aboard and they're going on their road trip with this guy. He's a little out there.
Who do they pick up that's nothing like them?
They're going to pick up someone from Maggie's story. Like, they have two girls with Canadian flags on their backpacks. They're in Australia now. They're done. They've spent all their money from their diamond heist. Now they're hitchhiking.
Yeah. So you got two guys in a van, which seems like they haven't learned their lesson.
They did not.
They promised to take them where? To the airport? To a boat?
Let's say a boat, because they're going to go to New Zealand next.
Yes. They're going to check every item off their list, or like literally die trying.
Yeah, they really want to go to Hobbiton.
Yes.
That's where they're heading into New Zealand. They're big Lord of the Rings fans. It's super nerdy. And just, they're like, hey, any ride we can get, because we burned all our diamond money already.
So our two protagonists, right? They decide to help all of these people. They're like, they should be finding their family, but they're not. They're like, we're nice people. We gotta help the surfing legend, dude. Oh no, we gotta help these girls, man. Right? We gotta help all these people. And they just keep getting distracted.
Yes. And now they're going to New Zealand, apparently, to go help these girls who they're now like madly in love with. They've each picked their favorite girl. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So now they're going to New Zealand in their van.
And it's got to be the old, and it's got to be the old surfer dude who's like, you know, man, like, you dig these girls, they dig you. If it's love, you do stuff for them. So why don't you help? Why don't you go to New Zealand with them?
Yeah, right? He's like the sage advice person.
You can find your friends later. They'll be bumming around forever, but you're going to New Zealand, man.
Yeah, I love it. I want to watch this movie.
He's definitely Matthew McConaughey.
Right?
Yeah. All right, all right.
All right, all right, all right.
That line, it's like, everything's going to be all right, all right, all right. He's totally an old surfer guy. This is awesome. We need to get in contact with his agent immediately.
Right now.
So what's the next story in this epic thing? Like, they obviously they're in New Zealand. Who do they meet in New Zealand that they're going to pick up and add to this group?
They're going
a hobbit? What? They're going to pick up some hobbits. I love it. They pick up some hobbits.
I wouldn't be against it.
They're cosplayers. They look like hobbits.
They're going to Mordor.
They're going to Mordor.
Which is a convention.
Nearby. Yes. The Mordor convention.
And what do these two hobbits bring to the group?
Other than a ring?
A ring? That's the ring that they propose with, right?
But they're fighting over the ring. There's only one ring to rule them all, and there's two different guys in love with different girls. Who's going to get the ring?
Oh, and that's where it all goes wrong, right? We have to have a disaster, right? And someone's trying to get the ring, but they put the car into neutral or something by accident while they're wrestling with it, and the whole van goes into a river.
Oh, no, their van.
This is the darkest part. It seems like all's lost. No one's going to get to where they have to go, right?
I got it. Matthew McConaughey dives into the water and saves the ring, but he dies while doing it somehow, but delivers the ring to them. Like, dies a beautiful, noble death as Matthew McConaughey, the surf legend.
You know what? How about they think he's dead? Maybe he just disappears. He disappears down the river and they all think he's dead. Oh no, he's dead. And then later in the movie, he pops back up and they're just like, oh man, you're alive. He's like, yeah, I surfed that river, man, all the way down. It was just, why didn't you call us? I was having too much fun, man. And my cell phone got wet, which happens, you know.
He was pulled out of the river by the original group of misfits they were trying to track down.
Fantastic. So they're in the middle of Hobbiton and we have to get the ring and the two guys to the two girls so that they can propose.
With one ring. Can this be solved by polyamory as well? Or is that too easy?
I don't hate it.
This is the polyamorous episode. That's it.
Yeah.
Love for Hashtag. Everyone. Everyone in love.
Love for everyone.
Love for everyone.
Love is love. Love is
love. They have to give the ring back. They can't steal the ring. It's a handmade ring these girls made.
All right, so new theory. They take them to the Mordor convention and they find replica rings. So they can leave the one ring, the hobbits, because obviously Frodo has a very important task to complete. They can get their replica rings.
I love it. So, and the girls turn him down because they're like, what are you guys talking about? We just wanted to go to Hobbiton. We're leaving now. We've been through a lot. You don't want to know.
It's been a long trip.
We're building an entire cinematic universe here, or book universe.
We are.
It's basically Marvel. It's basically Marvel.
It's basically Marvel.
But the guys, they're heartbroken together, but they've discovered that their rivalry is not worth more than their friendship. So their girls leave, they continue on their escapades, but they found their family again, plus Matthew McConaughey.
Plus Matthew McConaughey.
And they continue to find rad waves until the end of time.
Well, fantastic. It's called Oi Story, and it's coming to a theater near you just as soon as we can get Matthew McConaughey to sign off on it.
I'm excited to see what Maggie did for this one.
All right. So I did the Golden Compass, and I changed it to the Olden Compass. It follows Leah, a young curator in her 30s, who is forced to return home to clean out her grandmother's old cottage and handle her affairs. There, Leah finds an old compass in her grandmother's belongings and soon discovers the family heirloom hails from a small village in western Norway, birthplace of her grandmother. Desperate to know more about the mother who abandoned her and the origins of her family, Leah takes the compass and travels to Norway.
Ooh, more traveling. This is fantastic. I've never been to Norway, but I have been to Finland, which is probably an insult to both groups that I put them even next to each other. So I'm going to apologize right now. Don't yell at me in the comments. I just meant that part of the world.
I have not been to Norway, but Olden is a little small village in Norway.
Oh,
that makes sense. Cute. I have a friend, Jorgen, who's from Norway. He will also make fun of me for this. Absolutely, because I know nothing about Norway, although I was invited to move there.
Oh, my family lineage is Norwegian, so I feel very connected to this story, Maggie.
One of our publishing sisters is from Norway as well.
Oh, really? Which one?
Lillian.
Lillian? Oh, I'm so excited for her book.
She is a fantasy writer that was signed on with our publisher, and yeah, so fun. So from Norway, and when I did the title, I was like, oh, Olden Village, I'm into it.
Where are we going with this? Is this truly magical kind of place? Is it a romantic comedy?
I would definitely say there's some romantic subplots. I would classify, I'm a women's fiction suspense writer. It's definitely got some women's fiction suspense going on. I think a big thing is that she goes to Norway because she had this mother who abandoned her. And so she's hoping that by going back to this small village where her mother grew up, she may learn more about that background and that life. And she actually, for the first time in her life, feels accepted in this village, where she hasn't really felt that everywhere else. She obviously has to confront the past and confront the truth. And it's like, does she confront it or does she keep running for the rest of her life like she's been doing since her adulthood?
I like it.
This little village, do they remember her mother? And if so, has information for her?
So I think they remember her mother, but it's more about her grandmother, because her grandmother was born and raised here. And that's also who raised her. So they do remember her mom, but her mom was more of a kid when they were there before they immigrated. And it was a big place for her just to really discover her roots. She's definitely going to meet grandson of her grandmother's best friend and maybe the granddaughter. I'm into both. But she definitely is. She's got some conflicts because she has met all these wonderful people. She's in this village where they completely accept her. She's surrounded by these beautiful glaciers and she's like, I want to stay here. But then a really dark secret from her past is coming up and she has to confront it. She has to run away from it like she's done her whole life. Now, what is that dark secret?
Lindsay, do you have any idea what the dark secret is?
Does she know who her father is? Like, maybe the father is like a person who was really bad in the town and he got run out and maybe he did some bad things. And so the mother was very secretive about who the father was. And that's why they're like kind of standoffish about her and she doesn't know. And she has to discover this really dark part of herself, of the other side of who she is.
I'm thinking the mayor, the old mayor, right? He gets in trouble for knocking up her mother. And then it turns out he's also corrupt about a whole bunch of other things. And they have to run him out of town.
But he ran her out of town originally. Mm-hmm. Obviously got the mom pregnant. Was a big situation. And grandma's like, we got to leave. Mom's like, obviously we got to leave. And then they immigrated. And then mom's like, I'm miserable and took off. So yeah, that's great. Somebody of authority who also won't accept her and, you know, maybe has a family that is also very abrasive and won't accept her because they're like, no, we have this perfect image in this perfect little tourist town. And you're ruining everything.
There has to be some money involved. He maybe didn't come from money, but he married into money. So maybe like this illicit affair would break off this marriage and his whole standing would be gone. All his money would be gone. He would no longer be able to get the vote anymore. So he has to kind of keep this on the down low.
Now, in Norway, the winters are very intense, shall we say. So I think it'd be really great if she goes there. She hangs out, and then she gets snowed in. She's forced to go through all of this when it's dark all the time. It could be a very spooky backdrop to things. Is she from the U.S.? Oh, no, I'm sorry. She's from Canada, because nobody likes U.S. travelers.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe she is from the U.S. Maybe she's from, like, California. She's not used to winter. Like, you can put her in Canada, but it's like, honestly, snow is not snow. Like, snow.
Whatever.
So I think, you know, if she's from maybe California or something like that, somewhere
Arizona.
Around there, Arizona.
Yeah.
Then she's just like, what is this and why am I here? And she's not prepared. So she obviously has to get somebody, maybe the granddaughter, whatever she's into. Somebody has to help her out. And that means she needs winter clothes. She doesn't have any winter clothes. Why would she have winter clothes? Mm-hmm. Doesn't know what snow is.
I love this. It's like it should happen in rom-coms at around like the early part, like chapter 5, this forced proximity thing where maybe there's a big blizzard and now she's snowed in and she's ill-prepared. And so their romantic interest is trying to help her. And she's discovering all these dark secrets about not only her own history, but about the town.
Mm-hmm. Romantic interest owns the inn that she's staying in. It's very Hallmark.
I love this. Now it's a whole movie.
It is the olden compass.
The olden compass.
What's the compass belong to? Like, maybe the compass is like a clue that her grandmother left for her to go find in like the old museum to help unlock all this history.
It's a broken compass and it only points one way, but when you get it to the right place and look, it points to where, I don't know, some documents are, their love letters to each other, something like that.
Birth certificate.
There you go.
Points to her birth certificate.
I love it.
Oh, and you can't get there during the summer because it's on a cliff. So when the snow comes and fills it up, then you can walk up to it, but it doesn't make any sense. It's just like a stone wall. And then she goes out again after the snow, right? Because she's come to terms with all the snow. And there it is. Now she can walk to whatever it is. It makes sense.
You know what? The guy took her there looking for the Northern Lights. And while she's there, she takes out the compass, like telling the sad story about her grandmother and the compass. But the compass is now going haywire, like pointing in a certain direction.
Does she go back to Arizona?
Well, I think that the grandma was her only remaining family. So she doesn't really have ties in Arizona beyond her curating job that she did, mm-hmm. which is why she was so into the compass and all the history, because, mm-hmm. you know, curating. She's just always spent her life running from her problems and running from addressing any of her past. And so when she got into Norway and got stuck there with the snowstorm, she had to address it. So I think she's actually very open to staying in Norway because she's felt so accepted in Olden and how, you know, she's like, this is actually probably where I was supposed to be if it wasn't for that mayor that sucks and ran my mom and my grandma out of town. Mm-hmm. This is probably where I'd be.
Fantastic.
I love it.
The Olden Compass, coming to the Hallmark Channel.
Yes.
I'm so going to watch it.
Before we go, it's time to give our authors a chance to talk about what's new and exciting in their lives. Becky, what's up?
Thank you so much for this great podcast. It's been so fun. I guess the most exciting thing I've got going on right now is my debut novel, The Things We Lost, is available for pre-order. You can find pre-order information at my website, maggiegiles.com, or my publisher's website, which is all linked there as well and should be linked in comments. I am really excited to announce that The Things We Lost is actually available on NetGalley as of the 1st. So if you are on NetGalley and looking to read a women's fiction with suspense and review it, please do request. We are looking for readers to give us some early reviews. I'm very, very excited to see everybody's feedback on the book. It's been a very exciting journey. Beyond that, you can find me online at my website, maggiegiles.com, or Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. I am on all of them. And thank you again, Megan. This has been wonderful.
Well, you're very welcome. You're a fantastic contestant. I want to ask you something, though. Maggie, could you tell our listeners a little bit about NetGalley? I don't know that all of them are familiar with it.
Absolutely. So NetGalley is a really great place if you're looking to get an opportunity to read books before they're published. You can go in and request books online as well as like their covers. And if a publisher is interested in getting your feedback, then they'll allow you to read it and they would like a review in response. It's kind of like a free book for a free review situation. Not every single request is accepted and you do have to build up a bit of a reputation, but it's definitely a great place to be if you're interested in reviewing early copies of novels.
Thank you very much. That seems really interesting. I'm sure some of our listeners will jump right on that. So can you talk a little bit about your book? What's its name? What are we doing?
Absolutely. So my debut novel is called The Things We Lost. It follows Maddie, who is a 30-something-year-old woman married with kids, and she has an affair, and on the night that she decides to come clean, she makes a thoughtless wish of, what if I had never met my husband? And the next morning, she wakes up, she is 26 years old again, and she is in an alternate past where she has not met her husband. And Maddie was really, really haunted by a lot of guilt in her university years because she had a friend who died from a mysterious accident. But now, in this alternate past, this friend is still alive 4 years after her funeral. So Maddie is now realizing that by not meeting her husband, she was able to be present for this accident and save this woman's life. And now she is struggling with wanting to go home to her children and her husband and wishing for this friend's unfortunate and untimely death. So it is a very internal struggle for her. It is very much a is the grass greener on the other side novel and getting to do a redo. And sometimes it's just not that positive.
Interesting. That is a fantastic twist on the It's a Wonderful Life pattern.
That is a comparison that I have gotten. It's a Wonderful Life, Run Lola Run, Sliding Doors, all great comparisons to this novel.
Fantastic. As long as you're not insulted.
No, you know what? Honestly, I used to pitch it with It's a Wonderful Life. A little bit different because obviously she is still in this life and it's not that she's been removed. But Sliding Doors has been a big one that's been compared to it. And if you have not read and you are a women's fiction fan, the book by Taylor Jenkins Reid, In Another Life, is also another great what-if novel.
That sounds fantastic. The Things We Lost, pre-order it now on Amazon. Lindsay, what's new and exciting in your life?
I have my very first book coming out in August of 2022 with Rising Action Publishing Collective, which is how Maggie and I met, actually. Her book is coming out before mine. And having a fantastic experience so far. I'm just loving every minute of it. Working with a professional editor on my work has really helped me grow as a writer. And we're working on the cover right now, which is thrilling to see what it's going to look like when it hits store shelves next summer. And I don't have a pre-order link right now, but the best thing to do is to follow me on Twitter. It's at LindsayRayWrit1. I'm sure the links will be available, but then you can stay up to date on the cover reveal coming up and all the other exciting things coming. It's called Not Your Basic Love Story, and it's kind of a play on her name. Her name is Becky because she's Basic Becky, and she is a very independent person. And she meets this guy on a plane and they kind of have this romance that sweeps her away just off her feet super unexpectedly. And he is, his name is Dev, and he's Punjabi Sikh from a big multi-generational family. So it plays with their differences in their lifestyle choices and how they imagined their future to be and their family dynamics at play and how she always imagined herself being mostly alone, and he grew up in this giant house surrounded by aunts and uncles and cousins, and trying to find a way to find a balance between the two of them.
Now, normally, I just let you talk about what you're going to talk about, but I think there's a burning question that has been unanswered since the introduction. What the heck is goat yoga?
Goat yoga is when you go to a farm and they have a flock of baby goats. And you get to do yoga with the baby goats as they don't do yoga, I mean, but you do yoga. And they climb on you and nibble at your hair. And it's just a very fun, usually introduction to yoga. Most people who go to goat yoga haven't done yoga before. So it's a very playful, lighthearted, fun experience. And it's just a joy, really magical. Been managing a hot yoga studio for a while, and I teach a few classes there a week, as well as the prenatal class and some really intense fitness classes. And that's what I do when I'm not parenting and writing. I've always thrived on being very busy. I have two little boys. One is 3 and the other is 1. Honestly, it's just amazing. I've written anything this year. Thank you so much for having me. It was a blast. I had a really great time.
So, which pitch deserves a place in the Word Crash Hall of Infamy? You tell us. Tweet us at Word Crash Game and vote for your favorite story of the night. If you're listening on YouTube, remember to like and subscribe and get in those comments to tell us how you would tackle our questions today. Everything we talked about will be in the links below. Thank you for listening. I'm Megan, and this has been Word Crash. Remind you to always get creative.